breaking news on Wednesday, June 21st, the first day of America's season of summer insanity, 2017. The Flint, Michigan stabbing of Lieutenant Jeff Neville, supervisor of airport operations at the Flint Airport since 2001. He was said to be bleeding from the neck. Is this a propaganda message of intimidation and submission to all of us? That news reports kept hammering away how Neville was on his hands and knees at one point. Curiously, onlookers reported the attacker as looking blank. Is this another Manchurian candidate with FBI links carrying out a false flag event, like so many preceding this? We speculate that the attacker yelled, "Allahu Akbar," but we don't know that yet. Man-eating flies and other abominable creatures, even some with two legs, are attacking America in a maelstrom of cover-up of some of the vilest abominations. InfoWars, June 21st, reports a Texan politician, protected by his power from justice, brazenly walking with 13-year-old boys across the border. The high-level global pedophilia network continues its hellish practices.
This is Elizabeth Cubitt-Caverly. And Lou, speaking of cover-ups, Senator Chuck Grassley is trying to look into just how agencies such as the FBI and the NSA unmasked classified information for political purposes. Susan Rice's role in all this is now being stonewalled, for we hear that all the pertinent evidence has been so conveniently transferred to the Obama Presidential Library, where, guess what, it can't be released for 5 years.
WorldNet Daily has a crucial article about Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman's organization, trying to aid whistleblowers. Dennis Montgomery with a lawsuit asking to protect CIA, DIA, etc. evidence from being destroyed.
The righteous are being maligned, while the evil ones in the leftist Marxist hate America camp gloat, believing they will always have victory. That wonderful Jeff Sessions, he came out with a comment that it was a total lie, anything about him being connected with Russia. We really pray for him, and we ask all of you to pray for him. The red herring Russia collusion lie continues to bombard the U.S. public, even as a spirit of Antichrist murder masquerades under the guise of New York City's public theater presentation of Julius Caesar. Just a coincidence. Time magazine's writer David Von Drell comments in the June 26th issue, "With Trump in power, dressing a blonde actor in a long necktie and calling him Caesar is, for an impresario, as obvious as Wonder Woman 2.
Yes, hatred in the homeland is like the pus trying to escape a huge spiritual boil caused by spiritual darkness and sin. Elizabeth, I know you have concerns internationally, too, with what's going on in Syria again. Will it mean nuclear war and or more Christian persecution? A little later, our guest for the evening, Captain Daryl Everhart, will be able to comment on the 2017 summer craziness and tell you much more about Christian persecution. I want to read to you a very honest and important mainstream media article, one more key happening in the last week. Time Magazine, the June 26, 2017 edition. A Shooting and the Risks of Political Outrage by Michael Shearer. Congressional baseball is a quaint throwback of a sport, not just for the aging players who take the field, but for the country they have been elected to represent. It is anchored in the unfashionable idea that political leaders serve a single American public, one united more by its pastimes than divided by its politics. Democrats and Republicans play for the fun of it. Since the first pitch in 1909, the scrimmage has evolved and expanded into its current form as a fundraiser for local causes played at the stadium used by the Washington Nationals. For months, without public notice or fanfare, Democrats and Republicans take the field to practice as often as 3 days a week, as early as 6:30 a.m. They're not particularly good, but that's not the point. So when a deranged gunman opened fire on a baseball diamond in Alexandria, Virginia, on June 14th, he was taking aim at more than the GOP members of Congress who had risen at dawn to practice on the far side of the Potomac River. He targeted the notion that the country could still be more than the political furies that increasingly define it, and that had allegedly come to consume him. On that score, at least, his attack was a failure. He wounded five and briefly united the nation's political leaders. When Democrats, at their own practice, learned of the shooting, they gathered together in prayer for their colleagues. Quote, "We may have our differences," President Trump told the country in a hastily arranged statement that set aside the belligerent tone of his tenure, "but we do well in times like these to remember that everyone who serves in our nation's capital is here because, above all, they love our country," unquote. In the U.S. Congress, members from both sides of the aisle gave a standing ovation when House Speaker Paul Ryan declared, "An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us." House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi then rose for the first time ever, she said, to associate herself with Ryan's remarks. The alleged shooter, James Hodgkinson, 66, a home inspector from Belleville, Illinois, was killed by the return fire of law enforcement. Two Capitol Police officers were wounded trying to bring him down, along with a congressional staffer and a lobbyist. House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, who was playing second base when the shots started, took a bullet in the hip, crawled into the outfield, and was airlifted to a hospital by helicopter. South Carolina Representative Jeff Duncan said afterward that he believes he had exchanged a few words with the gunman minutes before the shooting started. The man asked who was playing and from what political party. Quote, "I told them they were Republicans," Duncan remembered. And the quotation continues, he said, "Okay, thanks." Then the man walked away. Hodgkinson was known in his hometown as a political activist, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said his name appeared in the volunteer rolls of his presidential campaign. Hodgkinson has a history of violent behavior, and his social feed was a dark parody of the dismal state of the nation's political discourse, where disagreement is personal and anger is visceral. He had joined groups called Terminate the Republican Party and The Road to Hell is Paved with Republicans. In this way, Hodgkinson was just another symptom of a creeping national disease. Rarely a week goes by these days without new evidence that the debate over ideas and policy is giving way to violence. Opposing protesters attack one another in the streets of St. Paul or Berkeley. A soon-to-be-elected congressman in Montana body-slammed a reporter for asking an unwelcome question the day before the election. Vile comments, once considered unfit for public discourse, a common currency online. Most days, partisans benefit by stoking the political outrage. But few in Washington now doubt that anger has gone too far, crossing from passion to danger, from appropriate to irrational. "This has to stop," said Illinois Republican Rodney Davis, still dressed in his baseball uniform and cleats, when he returned to the U.S. Capitol. "And it has to stop today."
Yes, it does have to stop. Captain Darrell Eberhardt and others, such as Colonel Anthony Schaefer, are worried about a leftist Marxist Soros plan for civil war in America. And now we have the shocking news of a USA policy shoot down of one of Syria's fighter jets. And at the same time, we're putting on about 38 sanctions on Russia. This all appears to be part two of the Obama, not Trump, deep state McMaster ordered bring on the world war with Russia plan. We entered Syria without provocation or invitation, attempting to dislodge Bashar Assad. Western-educated Assad protected both Christians and his own minority religion, that of the minority Muslim sect, the Alawites. He did not support the Muslim Brotherhood and ISIS, so the New World Order Clinton-Obama plan to chop up the Middle East into fiery chaos decreed him as an enemy. With Russia, Assad's protector, now antagonized. We have the kind of war drums insanity that threaten us all with something for us that's far more reaching than one politician injured at baseball practice. You know, listeners, not all the elite are crazy and insane. I looked for it, but I couldn't find an article that appeared perhaps 2 months ago. It was an editorial by Mikhail Gorbachev, and it was really surprising. He was pleading with the world powers against nuclear war. Yes, we do need to put this in the deepest prayer. We need to pray that President Trump will not be usurped and neutralized and compromised to put us all into such a horrendous scenario as a nuclear war, a world war. And so we also had a week in which we saw the Megyn Kelly interview of Alex Jones. So now, listeners, news outlets like InfoWars, The Drudge Report, Breitbart, and WorldNet Daily are becoming household names as growing millions of Americans seeking the truth realize MSM. And, you know, I always wondered what that was. I kept saying to Lou, I think that must be something that we don't know about on the Internet. And suddenly the light dawned in my feeble brain. It was simply an abbreviation for mainstream media, MSM. It's largely lies and cover-up. And at the end of the carefully edited, controlled Megyn Kelly interview of Alex Jones, controlled as to even using lighting to distort Jones's head and neck size, sadly, an elderly, recently ill Tom Brokaw was brought out of the dusty archives of his glory news days to condemn Trump and InfoWars. At least Brokaw had the unusual MSM courtesy to call America a republic, not a democracy, as so many other columnists in the MSM world do. Then there was Dan Rather. They brought him out in People magazine May 2017 with the title The Return of Dan Rather. And of course, in this article, they went in to what I would have called the real glory patriotic days of Rather. And that was after his 2004 report on President George W. Bush's military service. People magazine, rather, says the story relied on documents that had allegedly been forged and subjected Rather, long a target of conservatives, to a firestorm of criticism. With his reputation under a cloud, Rather was forced into early retirement. We probably would find out that there was a lot of truth in his report, you see, but again, he didn't fit the paradigm of the all-seeing eye of CBS, NBC, all of the ones really are under it. He sued CBS for $70 million for breach of contract in March 2005, but they dismissed the suit. It wasn't the best of circumstances, he says now. I have a lot of flaws and have made a lot of mistakes and have a lot of wounds, some of them self-inflicted, some of them still open. I have no illusions about myself, but I do care about this country. Well, yes, maybe, but he had a tweet on November 10th, 2016, and this is what he said. Donald Trump should perhaps step away from his phone and pick up a copy of the United States Constitution. The First Amendment protects freedom of speech, the press, and the right of the people peaceably to assemble. We really see that bringing out these people who are being used, to me it's almost like elder abuse. Lou, what do you think?
Yes, I think it puts them in a bad light. It takes an old man, and at least in these two cases, and just kind of shines the light on them when they're no longer as capable as they once were. And it just is sort of, I don't know.
A little bit distasteful, isn't it?
Yes.
And this article does say that Rather and Trump were once social friends. It says Rather and Trump met in the 70s in New York City and served on a charity board together. The two fell out in 2000 after Rather aired an unflattering report about Trump's exploration of a presidential bid. Quote, he hated everything about it, and he let me know in one of those phone pulled away from your ear type of situations, he recalls with a laugh. He never spoke to me again. And so it goes on to say, of course, he isn't hopeful that he will ever get to interview President Trump. But the establishment, the deep state establishment, they're busily at work. They're working hard toward the impeachment. They're working very, very hard, even as the American people's hearts want something different. What about South Carolina and Georgia, Lou?
Well, those elections clearly showed that whatever influence the president has, it hasn't rubbed off in a bad way on those two candidates.
No. We want people who love America in office. And we must pray hard again. Lou, I'm going to ask you to lead our listeners in a prayer. And we must say something, that we are praying for a number of you listeners. We had such a wonderful letter from a listener in Pennsylvania who said she's under constant satanic attack, and sent us a small contribution, which was very helpful to us. And we are praying that Satan will be cast out of her life. And we pray that Satan will be cast out of all of your lives, because any of you who are trying to be the remnant, the salt, the light, you're going to face opposition all the time. Lou and I do. Because this evil thing is not just being run by George Soros and the Democrats, the Marxists, the aging weathermen. It's run by Lucifer, by Satan himself. So when there's interference with our program on shortwave or on the internet, when there's jamming, that simply emphasizes to all of you, gee, I didn't get to hear Lou and Elizabeth. I wonder why. You know why. We are telling the truth. That's why. And now, without too much more ado, we want to get Captain Daryl Everhart's take on a lot of what we've been talking about, and a lot about the Islamic factor and the Christian persecution. We remember his credentials are very strong. He worked in NSA. He worked in the Army Intelligence, I believe. And he knows quite a bit about this situation. Plus, he's a born-again Christian. And we're going to let him take it where he wants to take it to respond whichever thing he wants to talk about first that we've been talking about. We really are looking at three areas here. You see, unrest in the homeland, the move toward impeachment. We're looking at the possible New World Order, World War. And we are looking at Islam and the Christian persecution in the Middle East. Who would have thought that beautiful Western Pennsylvania that I came from would now have buses bringing in Islamic immigrants at the order of some of the highest officials in the state government? But Captain Everhart has informed us, and we do not want to be a people who perish because of lack of knowledge. Welcome to the program, Captain Daryl Everhart.
Thank you so much. And again, it's an honor to be on with Lou and Elizabeth Caverly on the Divided Kingdom broadcast. And I would urge you to please support them. And I hope you'll give out your information sometime during the broadcast. Elizabeth,
let's do it right now, because we don't want to interrupt anything important that you have to say. And again, we do tell our listeners that we have no commercials, so you don't have to sit and stamp your feet and, you know, sigh, waiting to hear all of these commercials, some of which you don't even agree with, think products that you wouldn't want to buy. You can write to us, and we do love those letters of encouragement. And if you want to send a money order or a check or even a little cash, the check and the money order cannot be made to us, but it has to be made out to WWCR. And while I'm stopped, I do want to say again that you can hear us on 4.840 megahertz on the shortwave Thursday evenings on WWCR at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And you could go on the internet. We report that someone had some trouble lately. WWCR.com. Click on transmitter 3. We hope that will all be cleared up, if it can be cleared up. And we also think that sometimes WWCR has been very magnificent with us, and you might find us on 7490 a few times, I think, early on a Saturday, very early. I'm not sure of the exact time there myself, but you might find it. And now you can also go to Liberty Works Radio Network, and that's LWRN.net. Again, LWRN.net. And whatever program you hear on Thursdays on WWCR, that very program, you can alert your friends or your pastors to hear the following Monday at 5 p.m. on LWRN.net. They can find it on their smartphone, too, and then it will repeat at 11 p.m. on Mondays on LWRN.net. So the address to reach us, if you would like to write to us, is Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. And again, the P.O. Box was 28. The town is Bethlehem. The state is Maryland. The zip is 21609. I'll pick up the story, Captain Everhart.
Right. And besides the finances, prayers are so important, so I would urge all the listeners because...
Oh, yes. You know what? Let me interrupt you right now. I would like to ask you if you would lead us in a prayer for Donald Trump's safety and against the impeachment and for our country.
Certainly. And dear folk, listeners, also pray for Lou and Elizabeth Caverly and the Divided Kingdom broadcast, please. The prayers are so important for their health, for their protection. So, dear Heavenly Father and our God, we come humbly before thee in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, asking forgiveness for our sins. And we all have so many sins of omission. The more I read the Bible, I see that that we do fall so short of standing for all that we should. So we do ask forgiveness, and we do pray that you would bring protection, mightily arm of protection upon Donald Trump and his family, and for also for some of the Republicans that are standing for truth. We had this recent shooting. I think we're probably going to see more. So for those who are standing for truth within our government, those that are close to the Trump administration and his advisors, and please do give them discernment and wisdom. We do ask for their protection, and also for folks like Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson and the people at InfoWars, Dr. Corsi and others that are risking their lives, Roger Stone, to get the truth out to people, and do support them. And we ask that in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And I want to say
Thank
that I
so
agree.
Much.
I agree so much with what they've been saying on the Alex Jones broadcast in the last few days, and that is that we are probably in the most dangerous situation we've been in the USA since the Cuban Missile Crisis. We're literally a couple hairs away from something terrible happening in the Middle East that would provoke a much broader conflict involving the old Soviet Union, now called the Russian Federation. And what we're not hearing much at all on the mainstream media about the shootdown, U.S. shootdown of the Syrian aircraft, is the Russian response. And the Russian response was basically, and I'm going to paraphrase, is that, hey, we were invited into the country by the Syrian government. You weren't invited in. Now you have shot up several of their convoys that were going to fight against ISIS. You shot up a Syrian air base, even though we did give them warning that it was coming. And now you shot down a Syrian aircraft, and we've sat there and done nothing. And you've been, I'm paraphrasing, basically you're coming up and you're kicking the Russian Federation in the shins because we were invited in there. And now you punched us in the belly. And you know what? The next time you do something, there's going to be a response. And what they basically said was, the next time we fire a cruise missile, the next time we try to get our aircraft up to shoot down either a Russian aircraft or a Syrian aircraft, they said, we're going to shoot you down. We're going to shoot down your drones, your cruise missiles, and your aircraft. And so we are very, very close to a world, possibly World War III, but at the minimum, a much enlarged regional war in the Middle East. So we all need to be praying about that. And we do certainly need God's blessing on our country. So this Russian response, again, is not being touted much on MSNBC or CBS or ABC and what I call the corporate-controlled media in this country. And a word about Syria and Iraq. The regimes that were there were socialist regimes. It was called the Ba'ath Party in both Syria and Iraq, although they were at each other's throats sometimes. Basically, both parties were secular in nature, and they protected, let me repeat that, they protected their Christian minorities. As bad as Saddam Hussein was, and he was awfully nasty with the Kurdish minority up in the north, as nasty as he was, he did protect the Christian minorities. There was hardly any massive persecution of Christians, as we've seen since the regime change that took Saddam Hussein out of power. Bashar al-Assad, whatever his faults are, has always protected the Christian minority in Syria. Now, with ISIS running all around the countryside, they're slaughtering Christians left and right. So our military involvement, basically, in Syria and Iraq, has endangered the few Christians that are still in those countries. And, of course, the Obama administration supported the Arab Spring, the Muslim Brotherhood, wherever it sprang up, including, I believe they mentioned in the book that we're going to be talking about, Crucified Again, they tossed one, and again, whatever the guy's faults are, they tossed Hosni Mubarak under the bus and left the Muslim Brotherhood, and although there was some persecution of Christians there, it was mainly by the Muslim Brotherhood under Hosni Mubarak, but Hosni Mubarak wasn't authorizing it, sponsoring it, condoning it. So once he was taken out, and of course President Morsi, who was from the Muslim Brotherhood, came into power, the escalation of violence against Christians and the Coptic Christians in Egypt exponentially increased. And so we can see that a fair amount of the problems that we have in the Middle East now are because of the previous administration, and Donald Trump inherited those problems that were caused by the previous administration's poor policies. I call them extremely poor policies in the Middle East. And I think that you, Lou, and Elizabeth would agree with me on that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I'd like to interject. There's another book that perhaps you will see one of these days, Daryl. And we recommend this book highly. I think we got this at Barnes & Noble last summer. They Say We Are Infidels. This is the title again, listeners. They Say We Are Infidels, by a woman named Belz, B-E-L-Z. And what a wonderful writer she is, Mindy Belz. This is put out by Tyndall Momentum, an imprint of Tyndall House Publishers Incorporated. And she was someone who traveled independently as a journalist all through the early years of the Iraq War. And it intermittently talks about another woman who was from the Middle East, I believe, originally. And this woman would travel independently again. She would raise money everywhere she could here in the U.S., and then she would go to the time and the place of greatest need, and she'd hand out packets of money to the people as they were fleeing, all of these Christians fleeing. It's a very powerful book. And in it, she discusses this foreign policy. And you see, we can see this new world order, now called the deep state. We can see that their intent was never to give these people hope of a democracy or a republic like we used to have. It was never that. It was this plan to carve up the Middle East and to bring on chaos. Probably oil played a great role in it. We don't know what all the purposes were, but it was to foment chaos. So that she talked about how first we were really heroes when the people were liberated from Saddam. And she does tell some things that surprised us how bad certain things really were under Saddam, even though he may have protected the Christians certainly much more than what followed. But what she talked about was there was one province, maybe it was the Anbar, I'm not sure. Anyway, it was where David Petraeus was. And, you know, I thought a little better of him after I read this, that he walked out among the people, and he was considered a hero. He set up kind of a governing council. He was really trying to give the people something that they thought that America had come to give them. But the minute Paul Bremer arrived, the whole foreign policy changed. And we were walled off from the people. And then, you see, the people became bitter and disillusioned. Then they hooked up with more of the radical jihadi-type movements. So that we can see all along, we started a lot of this. And when we go back to the late Dr. Stan Monteith, he interviewed people over a decade ago who talked about how we in the West sent materials and money to back radical textbooks for the children in the Middle East. So you see, we were helping to build what he called the best enemy money can buy. So we have a lot of collective sin on our hands here in America now, the ordinary Americans, you people listening, Lou, Daryl, and I, we certainly don't espouse this. We didn't want this kind of a foreign policy. So we really need to pray that God will foil this. But what you're saying is true, Daryl, that what we did, we opened up all of this chaos by our foreign policy. And as you say, it greatly accelerated under Clinton and Obama and the Muslim Brotherhood. We've said before in this program how shocked we were that Colonial Williamsburg had a forum a couple years ago on freedom, and they invited members of the Muslim Brotherhood. So, of course, I wrote some letters to them that we would never again contribute to them. We know that's a Rockefeller tradition. It was built, but it does honor liberty. It does honor our Revolutionary War patriots, so that we want this mess cleaned out. We want this advocacy of the Muslim Brotherhood cleaned out. And we don't know. We haven't heard too much whether these lower-level positions in the government are being filled, or are we still having this Muslim Brotherhood contingent? Have you heard anything, Daryl?
The thing that I've read quite a bit about, and we even mentioned his book the last time we talked, was Paul Williams, and he traveled around the country, went to the West Coast, of course, here in Pennsylvania, in the beautiful Pocono Mountains, where we had an Islamic fortress where they were firing fully automatic weapons. And as Lou had pointed out, if any right-wing militia had done that, they would have had SWAT teams all over them. But these people were allowed to do it because they're a religious organization. And so we just see this constant thing of the Muslim Brotherhood infiltrating themselves into what look like often front groups that are listed as charitable. They have that CAIR, and I can't remember right now off the top of my head what that stood for, but you've got the these different organizations that are actually collecting money to buy arms and that, and send arms to Hamas, to Hezbollah, and to Al-Qaeda, to the Al-Nusra Front. All of these militant Sunni groups, which, by the way, are being financed out of our alleged ally, Saudi Arabia, and who our alleged ally, Saudi Arabia, also providing most of the funding, if almost all of it, for all of this mosque building that's going on, not only in Europe, but all across the United States of America. And you mentioned that beautiful colonial church, the picture of it, that had been converted into a mosque. We're finding out that this is happening. It's not just, you know, a one spot here, maybe once a year, one spot on the East Coast. This is happening all across America, and this mosque building is increasing just super fast. And as I had mentioned before, I think we're committing national suicide by bringing all these Islamists into the country, many of whom are, and almost all the mosques, as we mentioned before in a previous broadcast, almost all the mosques are controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood. Yes, I know Barack Hussein Obama said that they're moderate Muslims. They're not. The Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization from which Al-Qaeda grew out of. When they suppressed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt in, say, like the 1930s, 1940s, and then later, they moved a lot of them into Saudi Arabia, into Syria, and into Iraq, and they moved all across the Arab world, North Africa, the Middle East, and they are, if you would, the parents of all of these very, very vicious Sunni Islamic militant groups. So they're all coming out of this Muslim Brotherhood, the alleged moderate Muslims that President Barack Hussein Obama often said, these are people we can work with.
And so yes, we and can they see were a people lot- that... He could bow to. He could bow to the king. And we do realize that perhaps it is wisdom to have a good relationship with Saudi Arabia, because the monarchy now is worried. They're even worried they will be overthrown by the radical Muslim Brotherhood themselves. So if that can be used as a leverage tool by President Trump to cut down their power here and building the mosques, as you're bringing up, that's probably very good. But we're very worried. We're very worried about this policy of shooting down the plane, because we know during the Obama administration that we were supplying ISIS with trucks and things, and they were given warnings before we were going to have an airstrike. There was no will to get rid of them. Instead, we believe that we really did have a Muslim president from everything we can read, and that this was a concerted effort to bring Islam into this country, too. And we're to submit. You know, if we do find out that this latest Flint stabbing has to do with an Islamist terrorist, I think it's so interesting that point that the mainstream media kept saying that Neville was down on his hands and knees. See, that's an awful lot like Obama bowing before the Muslim rulers, because you see, Mindy Belt says we are all, they say we are infidels, because the only choice given to those poor Christians in those countries, and it's really quite a terrific, horrific story, their only choice was to pay this fine and maybe they'd be let alone, or convert or die. Isn't that about it, Daryl?
Yeah, it is. And time flies so quickly on this broadcast because there are no commercials. So I just want to let the folks know the book that I have in my hands and that Lou and Elizabeth have in their hands, you absolutely need to have. I hope you have a pencil and pen handy and a sheet of paper. It's a 322-page hardcover book. It was written and published in 2013, so not that long ago. It's very current. It's got 16 pages of color pictures in the middle of the book, but 322-page hardcover book that details not only what we would call current persecution of Christians across the world, and especially in the Middle East and in Africa, but also it gives you some of the history of the persecution. This is nothing new. We had mentioned on a previous broadcast there was a kind of a golden age for Christianity in the Middle East, and that was only because you had France and England, some of the colonial powers that were down there. So the persecution kind of ebbed for a while. But it had been massive throughout history, and as you mentioned, having to pay basically what it is protection money to so that you can have your life and your property. And again, sort of it reminds me of the mafia around in my area with a lot of the fruit markets. They'd come by and I'm sure you're both familiar with these type of stories where they'd say, "Well, we want to sell you fire protection." And they say, "Well, we don't need it." And they say, "Yes, you do, because we'll burn your market down tomorrow if you don't buy fire protection. So in other words, yeah. they were getting yeah. a cut. And we see the same thing with this in the Middle East. It's called a jizya. And if I give any definitions here, they're coming out of Hans Wehr dictionary. It's a German Arab, a German man put an Arabic English dictionary together, considered the best in the world, at least in my view. Jizya is I'll give you the exact words. It's a head tax on free non-Muslims under Muslim rule. And my own definition of it would be protection money, because they call it a dhimma. It's for protection care. It's covenant of protection, compact, financial obligation. But my definition is it's protection money. It's extortion. And so if you don't pay this money, then you'll have your shop burned down, or worse, you'll be murdered. And they call these people in the Arab world who are, I call them second-class citizens. It's called a dhimmi or dhimmi. It's a free non-Muslim subject living in a Muslim country. And here's my definition. It's a non-Muslim, especially, for example, a Christian or a Jew who's living as a second-class citizen in a Muslim country who is forced to pay protection money to exist in any degree of peace. However, this protection can be withdrawn on the flimsiest of pretexts. In other words, if his neighbor doesn't like him and says he heard him insulting Muhammad, which he probably never mentioned, guess what? The local crowd shows up and possibly even crucifies him, but murders him, stones him to death. So these people that are living under what you would call Muslim protection, it's not really much of protection, and it can be withdrawn in a heartbeat. So that is a very sad thing about Christians, Jews, or anyone other non-Muslims that are living in a Muslim country today where they have an Islamic government, where they're under Sharia law. These people can be murdered on, again, the flimsiest of pretexts. That's something we need to keep in mind. Now, the
yes,
name
Lou,
of the book, and again,
don't you have something from Decision Magazine? Wasn't there a portrait of a girl there? I'm trying to remember whether it was like this case.
Yes, they had an article, and it was written in advance of the May 10th to 13th World Summit of Defense of Persecuted Christians in Washington, D.C. And they had an interview with Congressman Frank Wolf. And as part of that, they showed a girl by the name of Farida Khalaf, K-H-A-L-A-F, Khalaf, a Yazidi resident, a refugee from the village of Kocho, Iraq. And she was captured by ISIS in 2014 when she was only 18 years old. ISIS murdered the men and boys, including her father and brother, and took Farida and other women prisoners. She endured beatings, rapes, and markets where ISIS sold women. She eventually escaped with five younger girls in her charge.
So we see some of the things that maybe to you here in America, it's still relatively safe. It's summertime. You have your own culture. You have what would be extreme affluence to these people who are over there fleeing, and they don't even have a home to live in. Maybe they have a tent. Maybe they don't even have that. But you see, to you listening, you don't realize that it's what you sow, you reap, that what we did to go into those countries, it's going to come back to your children. It's going to come back to all of us here. We probably are going to see our country deteriorate in the way that the judgment fell on Israel when they were taken captive to Babylon. Something like that's going to come unless there's a great growing repentance in this country and a revival. I don't see any other way out. I really don't. But we must get into some of these portraits, Daryl. Those pages that you mentioned in this interesting book, and we thank you for this book. It's really heartrending when we see what happened.
And the reading the stories, it's one thing. You remember Joseph Stalin said, 5 million dead or 10 million dead, I forget the exact quote. He said, well, that's just a statistic. But one individual being murdered, and that's a tragedy. And indeed, sometimes we hear the numbers, And but when we read the individual stories, and there's this book is full of individual stories of people who have had, and there's a picture too of the lady that had the acid thrown in her face. The gentleman who had the acid also thrown on his face, took off his ear and that. These things
yes,
are
not...
Yes,
and I would like to interject again. Also in Mindy Belts' book, she talks about someone who is in the Crucified Again book, a young man named Jeremiah Small. And he was just beloved by everybody, all of the Arabic people. He had students, and he mentored them. And then they went, sometimes they went abroad, they went to school, and, you know, everything was just so wonderful. But he was murdered. So, you know, we can see that some of the most wonderful people in the world are murdered by this ideology. This ideology, and we have to face up to the fact when we hear Paul Joseph Watson talk about what has happened in England, he was one of the first people who woke up Alex Jones. Alex Jones was very politically correct for a number of years, that really there was nothing wrong with the Quran and Islam. These were just, you know, they were just too radical. But when you really look at the Quran, it isn't anything that's wishy-washy. It's you either convert or, you know, they're only, you're either a part of them or there's a state of war to bring you in. That's what it is. It is a coercion that we don't find in Christianity, even though Christianity through the ages has done some horrible things, the Inquisition, other things, other elements of so-called Christianity. But Christianity, if we look in the Bible, it doesn't tell us to go out and force people to join or we kill them, does it?
Not at all. And you, people have to be careful reading an English translation of the Quran because there's a rule we need to keep in mind, and this is followed by just about all Muslims, and that is that something that Muhammad said early in the Quran, if he says something that contradicts it or his vision that he got contradicts it later, whatever was said the latest is the one that is taken as gospel, basically, to
oh,
use
really?
The word there. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that if early in the Quran we read, okay, you can be kind of nice to Christians and Jews and don't beat them up too bad or don't kill too many of them or that, then if he says later, but be very harsh kill the infidels or something. That's the one that, especially all these militant Islamic groups, they will refer back to that and say, that cancels out any earlier, milder versions of how we're to treat these infidels. So that's something to keep in mind is, and that's it's that all Islamic jurists, the top Islamic lawyers and that all say that whatever comes later in the Quran, it basically cancels out any earlier thing that would be contradictory.
Very interesting.
So we need to keep that in mind. Now, the book, and I want to let the folks know before the hour's gone, that you need to get this book. It's a wonderful book, again, written in 2013, 322-page hardcover book with 16 pages of cover, colored pictures. I bought this down at Barnes & Noble, so I'm sure they have it. It's called Crucified Again. And all you need is the main title, Crucified Again. You don't need to write this down. The subtitle is Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. But the main title is Crucified Again, and it's written by a man named Raymond Ibrahim. And that's spelled I, B as in boy, R-A-H-I, M as in Mike. Raymond Ibrahim, and I agree. I think that both you, Lou, and Elizabeth, you would agree that this is a book everyone needs to read because these are not just unimportant people. These are our brothers and sisters in Christ that are being murdered, tortured, and raped up to this very day. And can I just read the caption here? And I think we did it on a previous broadcast, but it's important. There's this lady, Julie Aftab, a devout Christian woman disfigured in an acid attack in Pakistan when she was 16 years old. Now, they show a picture of her here, and you can see the scars she's got. After Muslims noticed a cross around her neck, they hurled acid on her, burning her eye and eyelids. And listen to this, folks. And then they forced acid down her throat, destroying 67% of her esophagus. This is not uncommon. This happens frequently in the Middle East. By the way, Pakistan, Nigeria, these are some of the worst places, Somalia, for attacks on Christians. So it's not just, it's almost, as a matter of fact, South Sudan, there is a genocide going on there right now. You've got an Islamic government in the north. Now, Southern Sudan gained its independence a few years back, but the Islamic government in the north, using its own professional soldiers, getting recruits from ISIS types, and hoodlums and thugs are sending them down into South Sudan, trying to totally exterminate the Christians. So there's the genocide, and I think we've all noticed this through the decades. When it's a genocide against Christians, it's like the corporate-controlled mainstream media doesn't even take the slightest notice of it, much less, you know, come out and report on it. So these burning of churches, now they've meant, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We're just agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The thing is, they'll occasionally show a church being a Coptic church being burned in Egypt or something, a brief thing, but they do not run with anything like this. We bring all these Muslims in, and some of them, yes, have been persecuted, but a good many of them are not, as we've covered in previous broadcasts, that are just basically economic migrants that are going up into Europe. And many of them, of course, military age men and coming to the U.S. But where was our State Department and our military to bring all of these persecuted Christians in northern Syria, in northern Iraq, in the southern Sudan? Why was there no massive airlifts? Why didn't we send in special forces and Navy SEALs and everything to rescue any of these people? It's a question that I think all of us Americans need to ask. Where is our government when Christians are being persecuted? It's like, doesn't anyone in our government care? Especially
the
state.
That's a very good question. And I think it's like in the future, they'll be asking that of these days the way we ask now, why wasn't anything done to prevent the Holocaust or to help the Jews and the days of World War II? I think they'll be asking that same question of why was nothing done to help these Christians?
I think they're already starting to ask that in the Middle East, because some of the Christians said how hard it was they couldn't emigrate. This policy is an anti-Christ policy. We know that. We're in American Babylon. We know the State Department has been doing evil for a long, long time. So that, and we know memorandum that came out, Dr. Noah Hutchings, that dear old soul who was at the head of the Southwest Radio Church Ministry and who visited China many times and helped the persecuted Christians there, he's the first one who called me one day and he says, you need to see something. And this was that memo. Right now the very name of it escapes me, but it was the big memo that came out that said we were considered enemies, you see, of the state if we were constitutionalists, Bible-believing Christians. It was an actual memo that came out of our government. So we realize that we're going to have these forces, but that are against each other, God's force, Jesus's force, and the Antichrist force, and we take heart that it looks like God is still at work helping us. He's still keeping Trump alive, but we need to keep putting pressure on the Trump administration. We don't want World War III. And there was a good thing that Mike Pence did. Lou, I think you just give us the headline of that.
Yes. This was back in May of this year, Penn says ISIS is guilty of genocide against Christians. So at least the vice president had the courage to bring that up.
Yes, and so, you know, we're here because we want to raise the awareness. We'll get back into some more of this book. It is really a wonderful book, and we are so thankful that you've given it to us so we can really study it more.
Let me give a couple quotes here because it ties in with what I just said. On page 4, we read, "Even so, a great many instances of persecution simply never make it into any English language media at all. There are just too many incidents to keep up with, not to mention that some nations are especially inhospitable to Western journalists. On top of that, many Western journalists are at best uninterested and Muslim persecution of Christians." I think that's putting it quite mildly. And then the next page, there's a great quote. "The fact is that while it is true that Christians are also being persecuted in non-Muslim countries, the lion's share of persecution happens in Muslim countries." And I already mentioned Pakistan, again, one of our big allies. So much of it goes on there. But there is another important point. Muslim persecution is much more existential and deeply rooted in Muslim societies. It is, as you have pointed out, it's rooted in the Quran itself. And so this book is very good at showing how this there's a lot of lost history and that this has been going on a long time. Let me put another quote. "The vast majority of those martyrs are being killed in the Islamic world. 8 of the top 9 offending countries, listen to this, folks, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Maldives, Mali, Iran, and Yemen have a majority of Muslims. The 9th, Eritrea, is roughly half Muslim. Of the top 50 countries documented for their persecution of Christians, 42 either are Muslim-majority nations or have a sizable Muslim population that is attempting to subjugate or eliminate surrounding Christians, and they have in parentheses Nigeria being the primary example of the latter pattern." Of course, we see Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab and these other militant Sunni Islamic groups in Africa that are running amok, even crossing borders into Kenya and other nations just to try to exterminate Christians. So it's a genocide. I don't know what else, other words you can put on it. Another quote, "From one end of the Muslim world to the other, Christians are suffering under the return of Sharia." Now, Sharia is a way of life. It's an Islamic law that basically guides every principle of their lives, including politics. Often translated as Islamic law, Sharia simply means the Islamic way of doing things. Accordingly, wherever and whenever Muslims are in power or getting more power, churches are outlawed, burned, and bombed. So we're seeing this all around the world, and this is so important that we're getting this information out.
It is, and Lou, just quickly, you have a picture there, don't you, from Palm Sunday. Wasn't that Egypt?
Yes. About the, well, no, I don't
know. It was
a
massacre, again.
Yes,
it was an Islamic.
Christians were hit by Sunnis on Palm Sunday. There were bombings of churches and horrific things.
And this is something we're going to need to continue to track. And we are so pleased to have Captain Darrell Eberhardt. And he'll be back soon all summer. We know that you have a wonderful catalog of information. As a Christian and as a military man, Darrell, we can't thank the Lord enough for your return to our program.
And thank you for having me on. God bless you both.
Thank
God
you.
God bless you, too.
And God bless you, listeners. Pray for America. Pray for our families. Good night.
Good night.